Today is Tuesday, December 26th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a gloomy Christmas in Bethlehem in the wake of Trump's declaration of Jerusalem.
This Christmas, this year, very sad. No celebration, nobody happy.
The Pope calls for peace in Jerusalem and mutual trust on the Korean Peninsula. Russia's opposition leader calls for a presidential election boycott after being barred as a candidate. Also ahead, a 2017 marked a sea of change in attitudes towards sexual misconduct in the U.S. It's all on today's International Edition. Christians around the world are celebrating and have celebrated Christmas, but in the Holy Land, Israeli-Palestinian tensions put a damper on festivities. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Palestinian-ruled Bethlehem.
Bells at the Church of the Nativity summon the faithful to celebrate Christmas at the traditional birthplace of Jesus in the West Bank town of Bethlehem. But turnout was sparse in the wake of 3 weeks of Palestinian protests against U.S. President Donald Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Palestinian Michael Kumsia sat in his empty souvenir shop in Manger Square and put the blame squarely on Trump.
He make a problem. He don't make any solution. He don't find any solution for the problem.
Cafe owner Hader Kanan said customers are few and far between.
This Christmas, this year, very sad. No celebration, nobody happy. Bad situation. Everything bad.
Some tourists canceled their trips to Bethlehem, but others were not deterred.
I wasn't afraid to come. I'm not afraid being here at all. I'm pleased to see the security.
Gail Perkins, who came from Los Angeles in the United States, said there is no better place to be on Christmas than Bethlehem.
It kind of makes the biblical stories that I've known all my life come alive because I can see the countryside, hear the language, and smell the food.
Many pilgrims waited a lifetime to visit Bethlehem, but the Palestinians who live here are still waiting for better times. Robert Berger for VOA News, Bethlehem.
Vediamo Gesù nei bambini di tutto il mondo.
In Rome, during his Christmas Eve Mass Sunday, attended by about 10,000 people and outside of St. Peter's Basilica, Pope Francis used his speech to call for peace in Jerusalem in the hope for resumed dialogue between the Israelis and Palestinians and for a negotiated solution that would allow for both sides to peacefully coexist. The Pope spoke of the suffering of children in conflicts and lamented the winds of war are blowing throughout the world. Palestinians have been angered with President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Meanwhile, Israel's welcoming Guatemala's decision to follow the United States in planning to transfer its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in a tweet, thanked Guatemalan President Jimmy Morales, while Palestinian authorities denounced the decision. Morales made the announcement Sunday after telling Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of the plans in a telephone call. VOA's Steve Miller has details.
Guatemala's president announced on Christmas Eve that the Central American country will move its embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, becoming the first nation to follow the lead of U.S. President Donald Trump in ordering the change. Guatemala was one of nine nations that voted with the United States and Israel last Thursday when the United Nations General Assembly overwhelmingly adopted a non-binding resolution denouncing Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Trump didn't set any timetable for moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and neither did Guatemalan President Jimmy Morales. In a post on his official Facebook account Sunday, Morales said that after talks with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he decided to instruct Guatemala's foreign ministry to move the embassy. Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman Emmanuel Nashon praised the move.
We believe that it is an important sign of friendship. And a country such as Guatemala, which has been a friend of Israel for many, many years, is clearly in a position to show that Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel.
Guatemala and Israel have long had close ties, especially in security matters and Israeli arms sales to Guatemala. No other country has their embassy for Israel in Jerusalem, though the Czech Republic has said it is considering such a move.
That's VOA's Steve Miller in Washington. Severe drought and conflict in East Africa left more than 37 million people severely food insecure in 2017. That's according to the UN World Food Program. Emergency relief efforts helped much of the region avoid the worst of the exception, with the exception of South Sudan, where famine was declared in two regions in early 2017, and the humanitarian situation continues to get worse. Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
2017 brought severe drought to much of East Africa. Somalia was particularly hard hit. Large numbers of livestock died and millions of people were displaced.
Somalia suffers from recurrent climatic shocks every year. But every few years, it has a regional impact. It's much severe than previous years because of the loss of several consecutive rainy seasons.
And, says Jordi Reich of the International Red Cross, animals are everything to pastoralists. Recovery could take years.
And I think that even if the drought is over, and again, it's a bit too early to say that, but even if the drought is over, people, pastoralists, will not get the animals out of the blue. You know? While farmers still have a chance to plant their fields again, hope for the rain, and grow food.
Elsewhere in the region, that is not the case. In South Sudan, war, not drought, is the cause of hunger. And the government has faced accusations that it has hindered aid.
Basically, what's happened now is that from October to December, we're in the harvest season. When the harvest should be coming in, and food security should be at its best time in the year. But this year, for the first time, there are 25,000 people in South Sudan who are facing famine conditions in parts of South Sudan during the harvest. And last year, there were absolutely no one facing famine conditions during the harvest time.
In February, two areas of South Sudan were designated as famine-stricken, although later in the year, the classification was removed. However, the WFP says that the number of people at risk of starvation in South Sudan has doubled from last year.
The economy is in a meltdown. There is something like, for basic food, there are price rises of 250% in the last year. So the situation is becoming untenable for greater and greater numbers of people.
In August, the 1 millionth South Sudanese refugee crossed the border into northern Uganda. The rapid influx has strained the local food supply and left aid agencies scrambling.
I faced a lot of loss. I left everything there. Crops that I harvested are in the store and in the garden.
Exacerbating the effects of severe drought and rising food prices, the fall armyworm wreaked havoc on crops across the continent. In Kenya, the price of maize nearly doubled over the long-term average. And so people in East Africa are hoping that 2018 brings more consistent rains, good harvests, and peace. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Russia and China are urging a peaceful resolution to North Korean tensions. Rohingya refugees face financial problems in Bangladesh. No Christmas cheer for Ukrainians facing freezing temperatures. And attackers burned down a farmhouse belonging to the leader of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Russian opposition politician Alexei Navalny is calling for a boycott of the country's next presidential ballot after election officials barred him from running. Russia's Central Election Commission voted Monday to bar Navalny from running in the March 2018 presidential election because of his conviction on criminal charges that the anti-corruption blogger and his followers say were politically motivated. The commission's decision came a day after Navalny declared he'd collected the required number of endorsements nationwide to become a candidate for president. And following Monday's decision by the Election Commission, Navalny released a video calling on his supporters to boycott the presidential vote. Scarlett Skivitnovich has the story.
Outspoken Vladimir Putin critic Alexei Navalny has been barred from running in Russia's presidential election. The country's Central Election Commission voted on the decision on Monday, deciding the opposition leader was ineligible because of a past criminal conviction, which the 41-year-old says was trumped up. Navalny has been jailed three times this year and charged with breaking the law by repeatedly organizing public meetings and rallies. He has been a fierce opponent of Russian President Putin, who is widely expected to win re-election in March, extending 17 years in power. Following Monday's decision, Navalny immediately called for his supporters to boycott the election and said he would appeal the verdict, ruling him out of a run at the presidency.
That's Scarlett Skivitnovich reporting. Since before he took office, Donald Trump has been involved in a running feud with many in America's most influential media institutions, accusing them of spreading fake news about him. His comments have helped deepen the partisan divide among Americans about the trustworthiness of the news they receive, and it's had an impact in countries where the press is not so free. VOA White House correspondent Peter Heinlein reports.
If you want to discover the source of the division in our country, look no further than the fake news and the crooked media, which would rather get ratings and clicks than tell the truth.
President Trump often hits back at coverage he doesn't like. He's used the term fake news in no fewer than 180 tweets since Inauguration Day, as well as in countless speeches, interviews, and comments. Press freedom activists say Trump's strategy is having an effect.
I mean, he's very eager to have Twitter, mainstream news organizations pick up his tweets and write about them and amplify them. So he is, in one regard, pretty sophisticated about this, in that he is he's using the very press that he is denigrating and is very sensitive to, and gets quickly irritated by anything he sees in the press that he's already decried as fake.
This is an apple.
Stung by the attacks on their integrity, major media outlets have come up with new slogans and ad campaigns like CNN's Apple to defend themselves. Press watchdog groups say authoritarian leaders are following Trump's lead.
We saw the term fake news being used in the Philippines, in Russia, in China, in Egypt, to justify their own repression of the media, their own attempts to delegitimize journalists. So we've also seen China saying, hey, the U.S. is finally waking up to what we've been saying this whole time about, you know, the media being problematic. And that's not what we want to see around the world.
China's top cybersecurity official recently cited fake news to defend against a report ranking China last in the world in internet freedom.
Even countries like the United States and Europe, they are all, everyone's discussing it together, like with these new media, these fake news, rumors, this kind of raging problem. How should we deal with this? We are all facing this together.
The phenomenon is spreading. Syria's President Bashar al-Assad dismissed human rights reports about deaths in military prisons by saying, we live in a fake news era. Authoritarian leaders from Thailand's Prayut Chan-o-cha to Cambodia's Hun Sen and Malaysia's Najib Razak have talked about fake news. Singapore is said to be considering a fake news law in the new year.
That has seemed to embolden those leaders in thinking that what they're doing is acceptable, that they can get away with it, that there won't be chastising on the part of the U.S. government.
Trump has welcomed several authoritarians to the White House. He hailed Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan as a friend, despite Turkey's reputation as the world's leading jailer of journalists. The Committee to Protect Journalists says the number of reporters jailed in 2017 hit an all-time high for the second year running. Peter Heinlein, VOA News, The White House.
Widespread allegations of sexual harassment rocked many American institutions in 2017, including Congress, the media, and the film industry. By the end of the year, numerous prominent men were suspended, fired, or forced to resign from their highly visible jobs because of allegations of sexual harassment and even assault against women that happened in many cases years ago. VOA's Carolyn Frasutti explains the change in attitudes.
This latest flood of allegations started in October with this man.
I gotta get help, guys. You know what? We all make mistakes.
Movie mogul Harvey Weinstein was exposed as an alleged serial predator of young actresses who wanted to work for his movie company.
My heart was racing and I was very scared.
In the end, more than 80 women would accuse Weinstein. By going public, other women were emboldened to tell their stories. Suddenly, other high-profile men began to fall in what would be known as the Weinstein effect.
This has pushed it into the forefront.
From Hollywood to the media, to comedy, celebrity chefs, music, and even politics. U.S. Senator Al Franken was accused of groping a radio news anchor while she slept and of forcibly kissing her while they were on a USO tour.
He just mashed his lips against my face and he stuck his tongue in my mouth so fast.
It was the first of several complaints.
I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate.
U.S. Representative John Conyers, the longest serving member in Congress, also stepped down after allegations from former female staffers.
I am retiring today.
In another case, at least 9 women accused Roy Moore, Alabama's Republican senatorial candidate, of sexual misconduct, many when they were teenagers.
I was terrified. I thought that he was going to rape me.
These allegations are completely false. They're malicious.
Donald Trump, who was elected U.S. president despite multiple accusations of sexual misconduct, supported Moore.
We don't need a liberal person in there, a Democrat.
Moore lost the election, and for the first time in nearly 30 years, Alabama elected a Democratic senator. In just the past 3 months, more than 60 men have resigned, been fired, or suspended because of sexual harassment allegations. The tectonic shift in attitudes triggered a social media campaign. Hashtag MeToo became the rallying cry for women worldwide. Time magazine named the Silence Breakers as its Person of the Year. The issue is dedicated to those who have accused powerful figures of sexual misconduct, calling them the voices that launched a movement.
If they feel like they're going to get away with it and no one's going to call them out.
The 2017 revelations also brought forward numerous corporate training classes on how to intervene and recognize victims.
I hid down on the floor behind the counter and cried.
The accusations have had their effect. Both men and women are now more aware of the definition of sexual harassment, and it's no longer excused or ignored. Carolyn Frasutti, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hey there, this is Shauna Renee, the lady DJ and host of Soul Lounge. Every Sunday at 1400 UTC, I choose an artist that you and I love, and we break down their entire career while listening to their biggest hits. That's what we do here on the Soul Lounge. Once again, every Sunday, 1400 UTC, right here.
VOA's International Edition continues. A new film from Netflix, Bright, starring Will Smith and Joel Edgerton, mixes an alternate universe, Los Angeles, with the world created by J.R.R. Tolkien in Lord of the Rings. As VOA's David Byrd reports, the film uses fantasy and action to address serious issues in modern American society.
Will Smith said at the premiere of the new film Bright that audiences have never seen a movie like this before. Imagine a mixture of Training Day and The Lord of the Rings, complete with L.A. violence, gangs, a magic wand, fairies, orcs, elves, and a dragon. The elves in this movie are the haves, the orcs are the have-nots, and the humans are somewhere in the middle. Smith plays L.A. cop Daryl Ward, an African-American police officer who is racist against orcs. Australian Joel Edgerton plays a rookie orc named Nick Jacoby, the first of his race to be in the LAPD, who is teamed with Smith's character. One night, in response to a call, they discover a powerful artifact, a magic wand that grants wishes, something that everyone seems ready to kill or to die for. If that's a little hard to get your head around, Smith says that that's part of the point.
You can go to these fantastical worlds and spaces, and you can say things that in the world of Bright about our society that you normally wouldn't get to say, or it would just be too harsh. But at the end of the day, the movies, it's entertainment. It's fun. It's exciting. It's wildly creative. The mashup of these worlds, I think, is really creative. And, I do love some of the statements that the film's making.
Everybody's just trying to get along and have a good life. All of the races are different. Just because they're different doesn't mean anybody's better or worse than anybody.
Hey, where's the diversity hire?
I got a dude in my car. I didn't ask for it, but the whole world is watching.
Boy, it's okay. You don't like me.
Man, I'm not out here to be your friend.
Edgerton, who underwent several hours of makeup every day for the film, also provides some of its comic relief.
And friends of mine have always said, you know, the films you make are too dark for the kind of person you are. I'm more of a light-hearted human being. So it was great to do a more, even though it's an R-rated film, it's strangely also very funny. And I realized that maybe I had more freedom to do that because I had a mask on my face. And I really took to it.
The Aussie actor says that the chemistry that fans see on screen between him and Will Smith comes out of his real-life friendship and admiration for his fellow actor.
You know, look, you can't buy chemistry. You can only hope that it exists. And a buddy cop movie is sort of like a bromance movie. It's like male romance. And, we had a good time together. Now our relationship in the movie, I think, resonates well, I think. Will likes me slightly more than I like him, but, that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Director David Ayer, who worked with Will Smith on Suicide Squad, says the fantastic setting of the film allows it to address serious issues in American culture without being too preachy.
I think there's a few too many divisions in our world today, and it can be hard to talk about that. It can be hard to talk about the issues of have and have not and racial tension. But in a film like this, because it is a bit of allegory, people with their hearts and eyes closed can hear a message without feeling preached to.
Bright is available on Netflix. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
The holiday season, full of magic, mystery, and wonder. And more than a century ago, one little girl was afraid that some of that magic wasn't real. So she wrote a letter to her local paper asking, is there a Santa Claus? VOA's Jim Bertel has the response she got in this holiday classic.
The holiday season was a magical time for Virginia O'Hanlon. Born in 1889, she loved the decorations, the food, and the music. But most of all, she loved Santa Claus. When she was 8, one of her friends told her there was no Santa Claus. She waited for her father to come home and asked him if that was true. In Virginia's house, the New York Sun newspaper was an authoritative publication. Her father would say, if you see it in the sun, it is so. So she wrote a letter to the editor of the Sun. Frances Church was a war correspondent during the American Civil War. Now one of the New York Sun's editors, he took Virginia's simple question and wrote what is now considered a literary masterpiece.
Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. They do not believe what they see. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, compared with the boundless worlds about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary the world would be if there were no Santa Claus. Why, it would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance, to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would then be extinguished. Not to believe in Santa Claus? Well, you might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove?
Thanks for listening to International Edition on Voice of America. Have a great day. I'm Lori London in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson affirmed in remarks to the United Nations Security Council that the greatest threat to the security of the United States and the international community remains the North Korean regime. North Korea's growing capabilities reflect a direct threat to our security and the security of the entire world, he said. The Security Council has taken a leading role in condemning North Korea's unlawful nuclear and missile programs and imposing consequences. Secretary Tillerson urged each UN member state to fully implement all existing UN Security Council resolutions. For countries who have not taken action, said Secretary Tillerson, I urge you to consider your interests, your allegiances, and your values in the face of this grave and global threat. The United States believes more must be done to rein in North Korea. Last spring, the United States initiated economic and diplomatic sanctions with the intent of pressuring the regime to engage in serious negotiations toward the complete abandonment of its nuclear weapons programs. Over the past year, many allies and partners of the United States have joined in these efforts. We ask these nations to continue to increase pressure through unilateral action, said Secretary Tillerson. Doing so will further isolate North Korea politically and economically, cutting off support for its nuclear weapons program. Secretary Tillerson particularly called on Russia and China to increase pressure on North Korea. Russia has continued to allow North Korean laborers to toil in slave-like conditions inside Russia in exchange for wages used to fund North Korea's nuclear weapons programs. Similarly, Chinese crude oil continues to flow to North Korean refineries. North Korea has a choice, said Mr. Tillerson. It can reverse course, give up its unlawful nuclear weapons program, and join the community of nations, or it can continue to condemn its people to poverty and isolation. Secretary Tillerson reaffirmed that all options remain on the table in the defense of our nation, but he added, our hope remains that diplomacy will produce a resolution. The U.S. will continue to hold North Korea accountable for its reckless and threatening behavior. Secretary Tillerson said, we ask all to join a unified effort to achieve a complete and verifiable denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.